If you have a brain, you have bias. So let's just own it. Some biases help us by simplifying our decision-making process. Other biases hold us back by impacting who gets hired and promoted, and even who we approach to be our friends. Welcome to Breaking the Bias, a podcast where we interview impact makers who are breaking the bias when it comes to inclusion and equity, because sharing our stories is how real belonging happens.
But going in with a willingness to be truly reflective and be willing to truly hear and listen to what the other person has to say, I think it goes a long way.
If you've ever had to have an uncomfortable conversation at work, and who hasn't, today's episode of Breaking the Bias is for you. Consciously Unbiased co-founder Ashish Kaushal has a candid conversation with Quinn Teske, Global Director of DEI and Employee Experience at Allegis Global Solutions. They discuss how bringing your authentic self to work is not always the best idea, ways to respectfully disagree and stay open to viewpoints different than your own, tips for enabling quieter voices in the room to be heard rather than only the louder voices, and so much more. Let's listen in.
How would you describe yourself, your authentic self? Because I know that we have, a lot of people talk about authentic self at work. And so I feel like it's a term that's kind of misunderstood. So I'd love to hear how you describe it.
Absolutely. I think being authentic is being consistent. I think that's one of the most important ways that you can show your authenticity, you know, is when people know what to expect from you. I believe that is really the core of what being authentic is. What I also believe is that being authentic isn't a free license to be rude or to, you know, just behave in any way that you please, because that's just who you are. I do believe there are things that are inherently a part of who you are and how you think, your experiences, all these things that shape your background, your perspective, your attitudes towards things. And I think that those are the things that you always have to stay true to for the most part. But you also have to understand that, you know, you have to be open to other worldviews and other people and their experiences that may be a little bit different or sometimes even contrary to what you've experienced. It doesn't make you any less real or authentic. It just means that, you know, they have a different point of view, a different perspective, and what they value and what they believe is authentically them is a little bit different than maybe what you feel about yourself. It's not a license to be rude, basically.
I love that you started with that, because I do feel like this whole idea around bringing authentic self to work is getting confused with people. I think they're feeling like they should just take all their filters off. And I don't think that's really what's going to be a productive environment. I always say, I don't even bring my authentic self to my mom. And so like filter out what's appropriate in the situation. I think that's still important. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't feel comfortable in the environment you're in, but I think you still have to be careful on what you say and make sure it's in the right background, you know? And so when I hear that term, to me, it means more about having the permission to be able to share different things in life that may have happened from a stress standpoint. Like maybe I had something, a death in the family or something happened personally, and I could share that with my boss and say, hey, I need to kind of take it easy today. I won't be as productive because of X, Y, and Z, and it's not a career-ending move. But I don't think authentic means I can come in and be a jerk, like you said.
Exactly. I mean, the reality is we're all human beings. We all have things that trigger us or make us feel a certain way, experiences, like I mentioned, that have shaped how we see the world and how we experience the world, how we experience other people. But I think it's important to do the self-reflection and the self-development work to really understand those things about yourself so that it doesn't come out in potentially negative ways when you're trying to build relationships. And that's in your personal life and at work. So really doing the work to understand those things about yourself can really go a long way.
Absolutely. It's no secret that our society and therefore our workplaces are becoming more polarized, and we're approaching the 2024 presidential elections. And I feel like the last few election cycles have given everyone permission to sort of take their politics to work. What advice do you have on how to be open about viewpoints that are different from your own, but and be respectful of them, but not really ostracize each other because of that?
Yeah, I mean, kind of a jokingly way, but not. Maybe try to stay away from social media a little bit more. I do think that social media can be a wonderful thing to share ideas, connect people, but I also can see the role that it has played in really polarizing people. I think that is one of those instances where people do take the filter off and people feel emboldened to just kind of, you know, assert their beliefs and attack each other. And really, it doesn't create that two-way communication because you're just commenting at or on or about someone's point of view. And you're not really, you're looking, it's almost like people go there sometimes to look for a fight. So I would say if you're feeling anxious or, you know, you feel like there might be some conflict that could be arising between family or friends or people at work around your beliefs versus theirs, I definitely would be mindful of how much social media you're consuming. We also know that there's a lot of misinformation out there. And unfortunately, you know, people have confirmation bias. They tend to focus on things that they already believe or go read things that already reaffirm what they believe. And then we get caught in sort of this echo chamber of information that just kind of continues to feed sometimes things that may not be fully accurate or may not be factual. So just being really mindful of what you're consuming, how you're consuming, really trying to stay open. And just remember that at the end of the day, everyone is human and all humans have the same basic needs. They all want to be loved, want to be heard, they want to feel like they belong. You know, those are core things that we all share, no matter what end of the spectrum we're on, from either a policy or political standpoint, religious. And if you can try to remember that and root your conversation in that, I think it allows you to have more empathy and be much more open-minded to someone else's experience or worldview or even a political view.
Yeah, that makes sense. I remember you and I talking about this once, and I love the fact that you try to look for the commonality and also try to make sure you read both sides of the story so that you get your own perspective that you can carry instead of just going with whatever's been said to you.
That's right. Absolutely.
Can you share a specific time or a specific example, sorry, when you've helped create unity at AGS when the social issue arised and even if people had different viewpoints?
Absolutely. There's a few that come to mind. And, you know, it really kind of came from working with some external partners and even consciously unbiased. Like some of the training that we've done with you all has really kind of, those best practices have stuck with us. One of the examples that comes to mind where last year, you know, we had a pretty big Supreme Court decision where Roe v. Wade was, you know, essentially overturned. That caused a lot of, I think, anxiety and, you know, it made people afraid, you know, and it also had people feeling like, hey, this is a good thing for our country, you know. So it was really, really difficult to try to figure out how to acknowledge that this was impacting people at work, but traditionally organizations tend to try to stay away from things that are very politically motivated or have a strong political nature to them. And so, but what that does, however, is it just ignores the fact that these things do affect people and they bring that with them to work. So we work together with HR and our ERG leaders, and we partnered with our women's ERG Elevate. They actually came to us first and said, we just know that there's a lot of people that are feeling a certain way about this. We're feeling a certain way about this. We believe we need to try to, you know, do something, maybe create a dialogue or something. So we came together, we looked up some best practices from some of the partnerships that we have on how to create a safe space, how to have open and constructive dialogue, and how to set some ground rules so that, you know, again, we weren't having the unleashing people's just unfettered, you know, feelings out there, and it didn't create an environment where it was further dividing, but bringing people together to just share how this is impacting them. Now, it was challenging, certainly, because we had a lot of women that felt like this negatively impacted them. And we had some men and women that felt differently. So we tried the best we could to create some balance. I mean, we did not want to appear like that we believe as an organization one thing or the other, although we all have our own personal beliefs about these things, but we just wanted to create that space. So we focused on what are the facts. We talked about like what's actually happening. What does the law say? What does it not say? What do we know that's going on out there at the state level? Because there is a lot of information, disinformation, as I mentioned. So we focused on the facts, and then we created a space. We went over the ground rules and created a space for everybody to share with some prompting questions. And then we also wrapped it up with talking about what Allegis Global Solutions was doing to monitor the situation and ensure that our people were protected, they were safe. If there were any changes to our benefits policies, that we would be reviewing those things and sharing that to our employees. So it was just a great partnership all the way around. And we got a lot of tremendous feedback that it was bold and daring for us to even just open the floor up, because there's so many ways that could have gone wrong. And it was a risk, and it was something new for us, but it ended up being a success overall. People were very appreciative that, you know, there was attention to it, that we just weren't ignoring it. And we were trying to create that dialogue constructively. We learned a lot too as well. So the next time we have something like that happen, you know, we've got some experiences now on what we can do to make it successful. And hopefully people walk away feeling a little bit more heard, a little bit more supported, a little bit more understood.
I love that. And it's almost like the essence of integration because you've essentially said, I'm going to arm you with the facts, and then you can come to your own decisions and we can hear each other out, but it's not going to affect us in the workplace. Ultimately, we can all respect each other and have different opinions, but as long as we're doing that from a place of education, I think then it's not as polarizing.
Absolutely. I think a lot of times we go into these types of conversations like with our armor on. So like, well, quoting Brene Brown here, like you got to take your armor off and you have to go in truly with reflective listening and be willing to consider that something that you strongly believe may be based on something that actually is not factual or true. Or you have to be willing to sometimes be open that maybe you don't know all the facts, or maybe you don't understand the issue completely. And that may or may not change your opinion at the end of the day, but going in with a willingness to be truly reflective and be willing to truly hear and listen to what the other person has to say, I think it goes a long way. And don't go into a conversation like with all of your war plan, your battle plan, like laid out, like I'm going to convince them to see it my way. I think that's where things go wrong from the jump, is like people go in with the intention that they're going to have such a great argument and they're going to have so many things that they can throw at someone that they're just going to overwhelm them and eventually kind of beat them down to see it their way. And we all know what happens when we do that to someone. They stick their feet in even further. So there's just those kinds of tactics, although they feel empowering maybe in the moment because we're all slightly self-righteous in our own beliefs. It ends up pushing that person further away and actually harming your relationship. And I love what you just said, Ash. It's okay to disagree. You can respectfully disagree with someone after having an honest and clear conversation and still not let that affect your ability to build a relationship with them, work with them, all of those things. So if we continue down this road of trying to, you know, get, you know, force someone to see it our way, we're just going to push ourselves further into these identity groups or further into, well, I only want to be around people that think exactly like I do or believe the same, you know, things that I do. And that's not what we're trying to do here. We've got to break down the boundaries and the silos and really try to get people to recognize the common humanity and the common values that we do have and be willing to accept at times when, you know, we just have different ways of realizing those values.
No, absolutely. And I think you just kind of triggered something in my head about this. If you think about innovation within organizations, right, it's not because you forced an opinion on me or I forced an opinion on you. It's we have different opinions and we come to a discussion where we're both open-minded and we come up with a new product idea because we both listen to each other actively. And I think that's kind of what we're separating, how we function in work versus how we function in thinking around social issues. And I think those two honestly aren't that different.
Yeah. Around social issues too, this is something that we worked on recently, again, partnering with our communications team, our HR leaders, as well as our ERGs. And we needed to come up with a way to structure ourselves around we're a global organization. So what we aren't is we're not the news. So there's this need, I think, from employees and totally valid, you know, that they want to know that their employer cares about the things that impact them. However, you know, we are a business, not a news channel. So trying to really be mindful about when do we speak out? When do we say, hey, this thing is happening? When do we get involved or speak up? And I think that that's something that has become more and more prevalent, since the George Floyd murder and some of these, a lot of these social unrest issues that are coming up and disproportionately affecting, you know, underrepresented communities. And what we did was come up with essentially like a matrix or like a crisis communication plan that helps us make objective decisions around when do we say something, when do we not. And we've got some basic criteria that is just very well thought out. And kudos to our communications leader and to really help us get it organized. But really just having that framework at least just gave everybody a better understanding of what we stand for, how we're going to look at this, when we're going to get involved and react or do something, when we're not going to get involved, you know. So that way, when we've got, you know, an individual that says, well, hey, how come we don't recognize this? Or how come we didn't comment on this court case that happened in, you know, XYZ, we can point them to like, hey, we understand and appreciate. We create a space, you know, through our engagement communities where people can really create communities and talk to each other just about anything. But when we're going to, you know, get involved and formally take action, you know, we really have to think that through and have a process, a decision-making criteria that we're going to leverage so that we can be objective and as fair as we can be about what we're going to get involved in and what we won't. So I think that really has really helped. And we've just recently started communicating that out to our ERG leads to really help empower them. When they have people coming to them saying, hey, how come we commented about this, but we didn't about this? It gives them that framework to talk through that with the employee and help them understand as a business, like this is a complicated issue.
And I love that you are taking the time. So like this, I think in social media, our response time is like everyone's expecting that you respond right away to everything. And if you don't respond to it, then you're not supporting it or you're against it. And that's not necessarily true. I think the fact that you're being thoughtful around it and saying, I'm going to respond once I actually think through this is important. And it's funny, I went to this session with Deloitte. They were doing something on autism. So they had this manager who was autistic speak. And he's like, so they asked him a question, how do you communicate with each other? And he's like, well, you know, a lot of times like somebody will ask me a question and then they'll respond with some before I get a chance to respond. And so he's like, my assumption is that you don't want my answer then. And so I just leave it. And he's like, and I was like, you know, that's so true. Like, we all have to learn how to slow down and like actually give the space for us people to talk so that they can actually respond to what you're asking for instead of just like trying to steamroll everybody, you know?
Yeah, that's a really, really good point.
How do you guys enable quieter voices to be heard, not just the loudest voices?
That's a tough one because I'm actually more frequently one of those louder voices. So I've tried to do some self, you know, reflection and work on that myself. For me personally, and as a leader, I do this often. I've incorporated this as a best practice, and we've actually built this into our inclusive leadership development program that we've just recently launched, where we have calls to action for leaders to adopt, you know, just-in-time priming behaviors, you know, within their teams. And these are not like major changes. These are just small tweaks or best practices you can make during a meeting or during some kind of interaction with someone else. It's really when you've got to be conscious of it. You have to be conscious and really improve on that ability to facilitate. We know that through our partnerships and development work around inclusive leadership, that the ability for a leader to facilitate is one of the strongest indicators of a high-performing team. And so engaging those quieter voices in a meeting, for example, it's really pretty simple. It's if you haven't heard someone say anything, you have to clear the room for them a little bit and ask them an engaging question or say, hey, Julie, we haven't heard from you on this. I'm really interested in how you feel because of XYZ, or what do you think? You've had experience with this. Sometimes those people have the best answers and perspectives. But if they are feeling like they don't have that open window to jump in because they just don't have that, maybe that naturally assertive approach, they sometimes the leader has to reach a little over a little and pull them in. So I think that's part of being a good leader from like a situational awareness standpoint is recognizing when you've got some of those types of imbalances maybe going on in a discussion or a dialogue and being really, really conscious and intentional about specifically pulling people in and asking them for their perspective. And oftentimes people go, oh, wow, I didn't think of that.
Interesting. I like that approach because we do tend to forget if somebody's quiet that we assume that they don't have anything to say. And usually those are the ones that are sort of digesting what's being said and formulating a thoughtful response.
Absolutely. Sometimes it's more about quality, not quantity, not who talks the loudest or the most, but who has the best idea. And oftentimes that can be the person that's quieter in the room because you're right, they're taking it all in and they speak with intention and when they have something to say. So that's such a good point. We did incorporate that as a best practice. We did a workshop at our North America Global, or well, we did it at our Global Summit and at our North America Summit last year where we did a workshop on inclusive leadership and we focused on facilitation. That was one of the best practices that we coached our leaders on was how to manage dominant voices and how to facilitate a great and productive meeting. We could go all day long on a tangent about how many meetings that people and organizations have that are highly unproductive. So we did roll some of that in there as well. If you really want to have a productive meeting, you know, you have to be able to facilitate that. And that's one of those skills that we believe are really important for effective leaders.
We love that. I think it's super important. Jen, I think this is probably the first time in history where we've had five generations working together in the same space.
Yeah.
How does keeping an open dialogue at work help bridge the generational divides and also the communication gaps? Because the way somebody who's 60 maybe talks is definitely different than somebody who's 19 and entering the workforce.
Yes. Oh, such a good topic. We actually recently just launched a new ERG called Generations. And, you know, it is very exciting because the kickoff of the Generations ERG had over 200 attendees across the globe. And there was just so much healthy dialogue and excitement because this is something that everyone can relate to. Everyone is a part of some generation. And there was just such a good dialogue around some of the misnomers about different generations. Like, I think we tend to, you know, fall into the traps of stereotyping. And I think one of the first things that our ERG leadership team for Generations did was really set the stage and again, present some facts. And there was such a positive, you know, kind of tone to it, like really highlighting and recognizing the great experiences and things that have helped form the worldview of certain generations. Now, just because you belong to one generation or the other, obviously doesn't mean that you are all exactly alike either. We know that, of course, but there are certainly on a broader scale, things that happened at periods of time, you know, that certainly influenced or impacted, you know, how different generations see things and do things and experience things and how they feel about certain situations. So it was great to explore that. And, you know, we're really looking forward to integrating them more into our, you know, our business and how, you know, the work that they're doing, the education and the learning and behaviors that we can adopt, even around, and again, reaching out and building a relationship with someone that is from a different generation than you is another way to learn and to understand perspective and to hear someone that may have a different, you know, totally different way of thinking about something. But that's one way is really leveraging the power of that ERG and the education and the learning experiences that can come through those dialogues.
I love that you guys are doing that. And I love the name of it, Generations. That's really cool, the ERG name. I have a good friend, Christopher Bylon. He used to be the diversity officer at International Fragrances. And he had a program where he had interns and basically entry-level people once a month mentor the leadership because the leadership was making policy decisions that they assumed would work well for that generation, but it wasn't. And that was one way to make sure that they're in the know before they made a decision.
Oh, that's such a great idea. I mean, I really hope that we're, once we kind of get this ERG a little bit, you know, kind of off the ground more, we're going to have some great innovation and innovative ideas like that come to mind. We already have a mentorship program, and we have been kicking around the idea of doing a reverse mentorship. So maybe we'll have that in place for 2024. I'll give you some credit for giving me a little bit of inspiration around that.
I love it. And then are you guys doing anything with sort of ERGs or IRGs with your MSP programs for the contingent labor?
So we have not yet ventured into that realm. However, some of our operating company partners like Tech Systems has actually created an ERG community for their contract workers. And it's such a great idea and such a good way to give them a sense of community and give them a sense of, hey, I can go here to connect with other, you know, workers that have worked for this same client. So it is happening, but it's happening more in the, you know, within the supply chain a little bit more at this point. But, you know, I think it's a great idea. I think that there's, you know, a way to also help our clients understand that, you know, there sometimes, again, is a misnomer that you can't include contract workers in certain things. You know, I understand the worries and concerns about co-employment, but I think a lot of that has started to really dissipate, and organizations, and we're encouraging organizations to find more ways to include the contingent workforce in their DE&I efforts, whether that be giving them the opportunity to participate in ERGs that you have at your organization. I mean, the reality is, you know, 15 to 20% of these workers are, you know, converting into full-time roles. So it is a pipeline of long-term talent that you have access to, and their experiences absolutely matter. So I love that you brought that up. It's definitely something that is new. Tech Systems is definitely going into that space, and it has created some communities. I'm sure there are some other staffing organizations that have done that, and we are certainly recommending inclusion of contingent labor within the ERG community at our customers when possible.
I love that. I think one of the things I was trying to pitch last year was the idea of it just renaming the ERG to an IRG and like inclusive resource group. And then that allows both essentially your whole total talent to participate and not have to be an employee necessarily to be part of that group.
I love that. I think that's great.
What advice would you give other organizations looking to launch an ERG? I know you guys did some interesting things like giving bonuses to the people who run them for their time.
Yeah, absolutely. We launched that this past year. It certainly didn't start out that way, of course. And we've put a lot of intention around providing support, resources, and structure to the ERG, and trying to be mindful not to feel like we're policing either, because this is a people-led effort. This isn't something that is, I mean, we're corporate sanctioning it, you know, to as much as we can so that they have the resources and the structure they need to make an impact. But we really need to empower those leaders of those ERGs to make decisions, work with their committees and memberships to focus on the things that are going to matter to that community and make a business impact. So that's really been the most important thing to me, is making sure that the ERGs are aligned with your business and understand how they fit into the larger picture of driving business and creating impact for your organization. And that can really show up in two ways. It can be from an employer branding standpoint. We've done, I think, a really nice job of leveraging our ERG communities and the impacts that they've had to really as an attraction tool for talent and really getting people involved early. So when someone is being onboarded, you know, that is the time to say, hey, we'd love for you to be a part of some of our communities here at AGS. Let us share more about what they're all about. We use all types of different media just to really create engagement early on so that people can find that, you know, that sense of belonging with our organization. So getting people involved early, having some structure, giving them resources. I think that's the most important thing. You have to give them resources to be able to be impactful. So we do have an annual budget. Each ERG gets a certain amount of budget to spend every year. And we do recognition and bonuses for ERG leads and committees. And we also recognize ERGs all throughout the year. So we have different categories where we'll, you know, most impact, we'll have ERG of the year, ERG of the quarter. So then that also gives, you know, maybe some of the newer ERGs or smaller ERGs an opportunity to still be recognized and not necessarily always be dominated by the ones that have been around the longest or have the largest membership base. So those are some of those things that we've been doing, and certainly, you know, learned a lot along the way around just how to continue to support, mature, and create that partnership between ERGs, the business, and then the DE&I and HR teams.
I love that. And then is there anything important that I haven't asked you so far that you want to bring up in our podcast? Because it's been super insightful and I want to make sure that ideas are shared and heard.
Oh man. And this goes directly to our partnership, you know, with you, Ash, and your organization. I think there's still an opportunity for organizations to understand the importance of integrating DE&I throughout the organization. And that is inclusive of behavior, you know, behavior development, training and development, really finding ways to integrate DE&I in all parts of the organization and in the business. It's not something that just sits in HR or just sits with the DE&I team. It's something that really touches everything across the organization. And that's how I would really encourage executives, leaders, DE&I leaders, and partners to think about DE&I. Now, we obviously can't be everywhere all at once. You know, it takes time to mature the DE&I strategy and really find those pockets where it needs to be embedded the most. But that would be the one thing that we've been really working towards. But it does take time. It takes intention. And it takes everyone. It takes everyone to make that come alive. So that would be one thing I think I would just like to emphasize.
I love that. And I think, you know, I've talked about, and you kind of lead me into the next question, is you know, I talked about, like, you can't change behavior overnight. Even, for example, if you want your husband to stop doing something, just telling him once and expecting an immediate reaction isn't really the long-term strategy. You have to basically be patient because it's a journey, not a destination. So having said that, it's about building little habits and stuff like that. We at CEO always talk about microprogressions, small action steps that you can take that lead to big impact over time. Do you recommend people practice to help find a common ground despite having different viewpoints? And what's one microprogression you like to put in practice or share with your organization to help make change happen long term?
That's a good one. I think there's lots of just different behaviors that I've, you know, adopted myself over time that, you know, I tend to be a highly emotional and sometimes reactive. So I think there is, again, some of that work that you have to do on your own. And I think some of that does come with just maturity and time, or maybe just having kids where they drive your patience up the wall and you learn how to be more understanding and patient over time. But as an organization, I really think it has to start with being at the table and really having conversations with your leadership team and really understanding how they see themselves being a part of this. I think a lot of organizations kind of do a ground up approach or a top down approach. And I think it's important to do both. And that's how you're going to get that consistency and reinforcement along the way. You know, it has to be integrated into the organization's strategic priorities so that when the work is actually getting done, the people that are involved to help that work come alive, you know, feel included, feel like they understand why we're doing it, and they're much more likely to continue when they're involved, you know, in the process versus something that feels like it's just being done to them. For example, and this may come across a little harsh, but I do see at times where, or I've heard at times where a lot of the DE&I work is kind of like, hey, well, that group does all that stuff. And there's this idea that DE&I is somehow this separate thing or this, you know, that sits over here in this department. And that makes it really hard to drive change. But when you think of DE&I as, you know, really kind of underpinning pretty much everything, you know, across the organization, from decision making to how you're looking at your data, to how you're running meetings, to how you're thinking about your leadership profiles and I mean, your talent processes and your sense of community. I mean, all of those things, it underpins all of that. And when you start thinking about it like that and you start with that in mind, I think it makes it easier for people to kind of see the big picture and to go along with the changes to improve, you know, the culture or transform the culture at the organization.
You can learn more about our guests and get show notes at consciouslyunbiased.com/listen. And we want to hear from you. Please subscribe and rate Breaking the Bias on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And drop us a note to let us know if there is a topic you really want to hear about or a guest you want to have on the show. Thanks for listening to Breaking the Bias.